Yo, what's up? How was break time? Jesus. All right, I'm sitting down. That thing's too bright. Did you guys get anything good to drink? Still no food? I crushed 4 pieces of pizza. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let me introduce you to Simon before we do our final panel here. Simon is with FanWide. You can see their sign over there, and if you take a picture of it the right way, you can get that square thing. No, the picture, not Simon. Simon, what's going on?
Not much. Thank you for having me, and thank you, everyone, for coming out. You guys are hosting a great event here. Very cool. We're partnering here with the organization because we throw viewing parties for every team in every city. So download our app. Wherever you live, wherever you travel, you can find where all the Mariners fans are getting together to watch the game. So you go to a bar, it's going to be guaranteed to feature your game. You get sound, you get food and drink discounts. So we're just trying to build up fans from Seattle, every sport, every team throughout the country. So please check out FanWide, and thanks again for having us.
There you go. Really Simon, everybody.
It. Thank you. Go Mariners.
No problem. All right, well, that was almost as good a mic drop as Jeff had. It's pretty impressive. All right, we got one more panel. Let's get these good folks out here. What did you do with Divish?
He's coming.
Divish, there's no crown back there.
He's getting some from the bar.
Come on. You lush. Come on, man. Dave Cameron, I hope you guys know Dave.
That was not nearly enough booing. They don't know who I am.
Ryan Divish, he's from the mainstream media.
Boo. Fake media, failing Seattle Times, sad. Hashtag sad.
And Shannon Dreyer, who I get to work with every day.
Wait, Shannon gets all the love.
Damn right. All right, this panel will probably be a little bit different. I'm still kind of confused as to how Dave is on this panel, because this is like the Inside Access panel, and then it's Dave.
I'm going to make fun of everything they say.
Dave has inside access in plenty of organizations around the major leagues, so his take on it may be a little different, but still equally valuable. So, Dave, we'll start with you, because your life has changed considerably since we first got to know you as you were running USS Mariner at the time. And you've bounced around, and you've moved around a little bit.
Yeah, I'm over at Fangraphs now doing nerdy stuff with basically all the teams. It's fun to cover teams that are good. So that was really the main impetus. It's like, I don't have to watch garbage baseball every day. But I do miss the Mariner community and the heartbreak that we all suffered together. I'm really sad that I don't have to be sad with you every day. It's awful.
So when they beat up Dave outside of this place right now, Shannon's going to be the person going, stop it, guys, just stop it.
No, she'll get her kicks in, I'm sure.
She's got the boots on.
I don't want to talk to you guys as much. I want to leave this more open to audience questions and stuff. So let's start formulating those now, because it's a rare and cool opportunity to get a lot of really, really good behind-the-scenes stuff from three people who really know what's going on in the game. And I'll be honest, three people that I really enjoy talking baseball with on a pretty consistent basis. Shannon, of them, was the first that I met. I'll never forget. I'd known Shannon actually before I moved out to Seattle to take the job, but I'll never forget going down to spring training and just talking to Shannon and understanding the Mariners from her perspective, which now spans how many years?
16 years traveling, 19th year covering the team in some capacity.
And you were one of only two people in the country who have your job.
Yes. And thank you. That's full disclosure. This is my boss right here.
No,
I don't know that this could be any more.
It's false.
You're like assigning them to ask questions and scaring the crap out of me.
But you get to...
Wait. He's your boss and you yell at him all the time.
Yeah, it's true. Which doesn't put me in any sort of elite category. I'm like everybody else, Shannon knows. No, but you get to do something that very few people do. Sweeney Murdy does it for the Yankees, and you're the only two radio reporters in the country.
What's great about it is in TV, you get a lot more help. Everything's produced. You've got everybody looking up numbers for you, writing stuff for you and whatnot, but there's no freedom. In radio, there's freedom. All I have to do is pick up a phone, and if there's a story, you've got the story out. Now you put it out on the internet and you tweet it and whatnot, but still you have the time with the radio to get into things, to have the conversations, and I wouldn't trade that for the world.
Ryan, I was joking about the mainstream media thing, but it is different. I mean, you work for the paper of record in Seattle, and what comes with that responsibility? Seriously.
Yeah, it's very different, actually. When I was at the News Tribune as the beat writer at the News Tribune, I could write a lot of stuff and nobody would read it because it's not in the clubhouse. You know, the paper's not sitting there. And actually, believe it or not, people pick up the paper, the printed paper, and read it. But yeah, when I was at the News Tribune, I could write a lot of stuff and nobody really read it other than Tom Wilhelmsen or somebody in Tom Wilhelmsen's family. But now that I'm at the Times, you know, Lloyd McClendon, Scott Service, they read it, and I get little jabs here and there, you know. And like I've told them, I'm like, I don't take cheap shots, but it's not all gumdrops and rainbows. I can't, you know, for where I'm at, I can't sit there and be, you know, kind of question my integrity about the beat to say that it's all good when it's been all shit. You know, that's kind of how it is. And so I've covered a lot of bad teams. I've covered a few good teams. I've never covered a playoff team. Ever.
It's fun.
2006 is when I started, but it's a different thing, and they all read it, or somebody else in their family reads it, and then gives them bad information about what the actual story was about.
So what's the most uncomfortable you've been? What's the most uncomfortable confrontation you've had?
Man, that's, well...
This week.
You know, I haven't had anything horrible. I'm trying to think of anything that was... Jeremy Reed and I hated each other. I mean, I hated Jeremy Reed.
I love Jeremy Reed.
I was... Jeremy Reed could be laying in the street out there, and I would tell the next car to hit him.
Really? Why?
Yes. I don't know. He was, like, mad at me because he got sent to Tacoma, and I was, at the time, going down and helping cover Tacoma. And I will always love Adam Jones for this, because Adam Jones, one time, I'm talking to Adam. He was at AAA. He was the best player in the organization. It was an idiot move to trade him. And I'm talking to him, and Reed is just chirping from the locker over, and Adam Jones goes, "Man, shut the fuck up, Reed. If you get a hit every once in a while, he'd want to talk to you." And I'm like, I looked at Adam, I go, "That guy could go 4 for 4. I ain't talking to him, ever." And it was amazing, though, that when I got elevated to the main beat writer status and Jeremy got called back up, he was a lot nicer to me than when I was just this little kid.
That's weird, because usually it's the opposite. Usually they're much nicer when they're in AAA than when they're in the bigs.
He was that guy.
He's a hitting coordinator now in an organization.
He is?
Yeah, Brewers, I believe.
It just goes to show you.
Yeah. You don't need to hit to be a hitting coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, he drove me nuts. Other than that, like... You know, Sean Figgins and I had a couple run-ins.
How'd you survive Milton Bradley?
I was terrified. I'd send Larry Stone in there. This is a pretty funny story. So something happened with Milton Bradley. I don't even remember what had happened. We go in there. It's me and Larry Stone. I'm working for the News Tribune. Larry Stone's with the Seattle Times. Baker wasn't covering for one of his many reasons. And
Tweet that right now.
Yeah, don't tweet that. Hey. Also,
nobody worked more. Nobody.
Drink in hand rule. This is not for Twitter. That's somebody who tweets a lot. So we go up there.
That's not a real rule, by the way.
So we go.
You went to the bar specifically to get Crown.
I know. So we go up there to talk to Milton Bradley, and I looked at Larry. I go, "Look, you've been doing this a long time. You can go in and lead, and I'll follow." And then I was like, "You know, have your back way back." So he goes in to talk to Milton Bradley, and. And Larry says something, and Milton kind of says, "No, I'm not talking." And Larry went to ask him again about something. He goes, "Man, I'm not fucking talking." And Larry says, "So that's a no comment." And Larry looks at me and goes, "Where were you? Where were you to help me out?" I was like, "Oh, I was right there. I was right there. I had the next question." But when he said no comment, I was like, good.
I had very few dealings with Milton Bradley, but the only uncomfortable one I had was when I had to fill in for Shannon one night. And I was doing your job, and I had to go interview him after he'd had a really good game. And Doug Fister had won a game, which was, you know, he was like his third or fourth start in the major leagues. Milton had a good night after all the bad stuff had happened with him in the week leading up to it. And I asked, I get out there, and I don't like doing that job at all. What Shannon does is really hard. I don't like it. I like sitting behind a microphone and kind of prepping everything I'm going to say. But Shannon's job's hard. You got to get out there right after the game and talk to these guys, and they're all full of energy and stuff, and... So I'm sitting there, I look up at crazy Milton Bradley, and I'm like, "All right, hey, you know, what's running through your mind as you're crossing first base there with the game-winning hit?" And he's like, "I'm just thinking about Doug Fister." I'm like, "All right, well, that's kind of weird. Like, it's been a crazy week for you. Like, how do you feel about everything kind of coming full circle?" And he stares me daggers and just goes, I'm the consummate serious. It's my life. And I went, back to you, Riz.
Because I know I think about Doug Pfister a lot.
It's freaking weird, man. None of what he said made any sense. So, Shannon, you do that every night.
Scary thing about Milton was, and we all know what happened, and the stories come out after, and I think it's kind of a commentary on how teams will look at guys, oh, we can fix them. We can handle this. He was crazy. I mean, he was
terrifying
and possibly dangerous. And you saw it, and I'm not joking. It wasn't funny. This is a guy that could look straight through you. In a club, like really straight through you. You didn't know if he was there. You didn't know what was going through his mind to a point where you didn't feel safe sometimes with that guy around. And yet, how many organizations took him and, oh, we can handle him. We can fix him.
He's talented. He had some talent. It's just amazing. It's like I never thought I'd long for the days of Carlos Silva. But after like a day and a half of Milton Brad, I'm like, man, I miss Silva and his fat ass.
What was the lunch?
Yes. Carlos Silva, they brought in 4x4s from In-N-Out Burger, which are 4 burgers and cheese, 4x4s. Carlos Silva ate 4 of those, so that's 16 burgers. Poor Brandon Morrow, he looked at me one time, he says, I will never eat that again. Because that's the most disgusting display of eating I've ever seen in my life.
He had teammates talking about he had 2 pizzas, a dozen wings, and a 2-liter thing of Coke one night after a game.
He could put away food like you could not.
But it didn't show. That was what was so great. Is he never gained any weight. It was amazing. He kept his girlish figure all the way through.
Only $48 million for that guy. $48 million.
Shannon, what was your favorite Mariner team to cover? Which year?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Of course, it was 1995. I'll never forget Danny Wilson.
Was not there for that. I was a
Thank
fan
God, because I can't hear any more
that.
About
yeah,
it. I'm
tell
shot.
Me, what
I got
happened
nothing.
That year?
Your impersonation's getting good.
You know, it was 1995. Ken Griffey Jr. was there. Who can forget Edgar Martinez hit the double? Little Joey Cora. It doesn't take much.
Hey, you got a Sims home run call, too?
Nope.
Okay, I'm
not going there. Shannon, what was your favorite year to cover?
2003, because it was my first, and everything was new, and you know, you stepped in it every now and then, and was in the wrong place at the wrong time, saying the wrong thing to the wrong person at the right time. But that was, you know, up until that point, I was kind of a fill-in person. I started at KJR as a glorified intern for a long time there, but they let me go over there, and when, who was it at the time? Como called. Do you want to cover baseball full time? Yes, thank you very much. And to finally get the full view, to travel with the team, to be in the clubhouse when others weren't there, that was eye-opening. And that, I would love to say it was my playoff year. Haven't had one of those. Would love to say it was the World Series. Haven't had one of those. So until then, it's going to be
really
the first.
Those really are fun.
Well, they're tough, too, though, because I did cover kind of fringely in 2001, and it was boring. Oh, they won another game. Who are you going to talk to? What, I mean, the same questions. Over and over and over.
I think this group would be bored if that was the case again, right? You guys would be really mad if they won that many games. Dave, you've never done that. You've never been a beat writer. You've never traveled with a team. You never spent a significant amount of time in a clubhouse. Yeah. Do you prefer it that way?
Absolutely. I mean, like, I've never had a single interaction with Milton Bradley. It's amazing. I get paid just as much as these guys. Or something, you know,
Carl
comparable.
Everett never picked you up and threw you over his shoulder before.
It's really terrible that I just get to like give my opinion and then not have to answer for it. It's a hard life I live working from home.
So the one year at the winter meetings, we're there, and Dave and Jeff were there covering for Fangraphs. And Jeff Evans, who worked for the Mariners at the time in PR, he made Dave and Jeff come up to the meetings with Jack Sorensic. And they come up and sit there, and the first night they don't ask a question.
Yeah.
And Dave comes out, and he's like, is that what it's like all the time with him? He didn't say anything. Yeah. You guys asked like 12 questions. He didn't say anything. I was like, yep, pretty much. Because how do you write a story off that? I was like, make the shit up as you go. Yeah, I don't know. And so we do this for 3 days. And on the third day, Jeff Evans looks at Dave and Jeff and says, you guys got to ask the first questions. And they did, and they asked great questions. They were great. I don't even remember what they were.
Wait, they actually asked questions?
Yeah,
because I listen to you guys every night in the post-game interview. I've never heard a single question asked of the manager.
Yeah. And so
the third baseman?
Yeah, no, that's done.
Talk about.
So Dave and Jeff asked these questions. Zarenzik says nothing for like a minute each on both of them. I'm like, you feel satisfied?
All right, let's turn it over to you guys for a few minutes. I got more questions for this cast of characters, but let's start with somebody out here. Where are we? Where are we going? Where's the mic? Over this way?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So sports media, baseball media is changing. The internet is changing it in a lot of ways from how it used to be, and Dave, you're proof. How do you think it's going to continue to change? 15 years from now, what's going to be different about sports media?
It's interesting. I think, like, in my time, it's really, like, I've noticed the specialization of things. So I remember talking about, like, Rob Nyer back in 1997. Like, he was, like, the last of, like, the national columnists and how this was a dying breed. Because I was a 17-year-old kid who knew more about the Mariners than the guy on ESPN.com who was their national baseball writer, right? Like, there's no way to know all 30 teams as well as the local guys who go, and now I'm a national baseball writer. Like, this is what I do, the thing that I criticized 15 years ago, and like, that job will never exist. But I do think we're getting more and more into specialization, right? So you hear Kyle up here talking about, you know, things that I will never understand, and things that are interested to be kind of involved in baseball. There's no way for me to cover what he does besides just interviewing someone like him, and this is becoming part of the game. And so I do think more and more you're going to have mechanics specialists, you're going to have pitching specialists, you're going to have stat specialists, you're going to have scouting specialists, you're going to have all these guys who it's like, this is their area. And I do think, you know, maybe I overestimated, like, there still are national baseball writers, but maybe in 10 years, we won't have the guy who has the opinion about everything. We'll be like, you have your own little area of expertise, like a beat writer, in a sense. And I think the days of, you know, hopefully Stephen A. Smith are gone forever. But, like, you know, we don't need any more Stephen A. Smiths. Like, we need to get to the point where we realize everyone can have their own little niche. And I think the days of having one person have an opinion on 30 teams will come to an end. And how I have a job then, I have no idea.
Ryan, how about your job? Because yours has changed a lot just since you started doing it. Are you going to be writing game stories in 15 years?
Yeah, it's really weird that way, isn't it? Yeah, it's very different. When I first started, blogging was like a big deal. You had to have a blog. You had to update it all the time. And then Twitter came in, and then Facebook, and all these different things. And I got to do videos and podcasts. And I don't really know, but I feel like there is this aspect. You have to have somebody that gathers in the information. You have to have somebody there to be there to ask the questions. Whether or not that's going to be me or the local newspaper, I really don't know. I feel like, in this climate that we have, sports or otherwise, you have to have people there to ask questions. I don't really ask questions. I make a lot of statements. Scott Service looks at me like I'm an idiot, and then he answers it anyways. But, it's very different. And game stories, I think some people love game stories, because this is how I write a game story. It's not for the people who didn't watch. It's for the people who did watch. I'm writing something more than beyond what they saw. I'm going to try and ask more. It's like the other night with Mike Zunino. He's got the whole Evan Longoria-looking stance. Well, how did that come about? Why is this important? Why are the Zunino rules important? Is this going to last? Is this real? That's what I try and do with my coverage. Now, whether or not people read it, I don't know. But I do feel like you have to have somebody there to report on the basic things of the team and provide that information so then everybody else can go aggregate it afterwards when we're done. That's really depressing, isn't it? Holy cow.
I'm going to skip Shannon because we want to make sure radio is still around in 15 years. That's important to both of us.
Well, it's about the stories. You know, there's so much access to the game now, and it's more and more every day with the specialization and with the numbers and with what you can tell from the different metrics and the different systems that are being put in. But at the end of the day, there's still a story, and somebody has got to be there to interpret that story and then to pass that story on.
No, you're exactly right. So, like, Shannon and I were around. So people were talking on Twitter about Mike Zunino's walk-up music. And I haven't really written it, but Mike Zunino's walk-up music changes from every at-bat. The bullpen has a contest. So Zunino was scuffling. They were in the bullpen in Boston. He looked at Cishek. He goes, I need something to break me out. And Cishek blamed his walk-up music. They're on the road. They don't have walk-up music. And so Zunino's like, all right, fine. When we go back home, you guys can pick my walk-up music. You pick four guys from four very different genres, and you can pick my walk-up music. So Cishek picked 50 Cent because he said, do you really expect anybody to have Mike Zunino walking up to G Unit? You know? And then they have Edwin Diaz picked out this Latin thing, and like I looked at Cisha and go, what is it? He goes, I have no idea. I don't know what's being said. I don't want to listen to it, but it happens. And then Mark Zepchinski picked Slipknot because he's a big metalhead. Mike, you'll appreciate that.
I'm a big Slipknot fan.
Yeah, he picked
thanks.
Slipknot. Do you know the song?
I don't.
I don't know. He has
no,
a
my
Slipknot
wife's terrified of somebody one day is going to make her go to a Slipknot concert.
Yeah, and then...
it's like a big fear.
And then Tony Zick, the country guy, picked Seminole Wind by John Anderson,
either.
Who is... It's referenced Seminoles, whom Mike hates because he hates Florida State. And so, and what they're doing is they're keeping track of hits. On hits and runs produced off of each
song.
So who
got credit for the Grand Slam the other night?
I don't even know.
This is actually
that should
know,
count more than one,
if
right?
you were watching on TV, I was off that night and I saw it on TV, and Derek Norris got hurt, and so Jesus Sucre took over late in the game, and Zunino came up to bat, and you could see Sucre laughing and just kind of looking away, and Zunino kicking the dirt and saying something, not looking at him. I'm like, what was that all about? That was the Latin music that was playing. I asked Zunino about
what
that.
The hell
and
Sucre is
like, what's up, bro? Really? I'm gone this long?
I don't know. And then I told those guys, like, I'm not going to write about it. I was just curious, you know, because people asked. And so that's what they're doing. And that's the story. It's like, we can humanize a little bit of this, some of the stuff. Our little intern is writing a story on Tyler Cloyd for tomorrow's paper.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know. Her name's Emily. I don't know.
Tyler Cloyd.
Tyler Cloyd walked by Shannon. She says, "Who the hell is that?"
I was off for a day. I come okay. New one.
But that's kind of what we have to do. I covered UW football for a year. The access is horrible. We get no players, no coaches, nothing. Baseball, you get everybody. You've been in there. You love going in there and hanging out and just talking to guys.
Well, I'll tell anybody that the best thing about covering, and I'll use the word in quotes, baseball, are the hours between 3 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. Yeah. for a 7 o'clock game, and then I bail. I generally don't stick around for the game, but to hang out and kibitz from 3 to 6 there or 6 o'clock, count me in. That's the best part of baseball.
And it matters because it's such an insane sport. They play every day. These guys are together 14 hours a day for 8 months if all goes well, 7 months if not.
It's not even just the players. It's just everybody likes – I just like how many people will sit around and just kind of shoot the shit for a while. I love that. That's one of my favorite parts.
So you need to go in there, damn it. I got you a PBWAA card. You need to go in there and hang out.
I love how the talk is like the nerds don't watch the games. It's the old radio guys. Like, I don't watch the games.
I didn't say I didn't watch it. I don't watch it there. Oh. I got to go home to my family. Come on. Have a little respect. All right, who's next out here?
So my question is, I guess, mostly for Dave, but anyone can feel free to chime in. So as someone mentioned earlier, like Sabermetrics has won, but the whole thing with front offices these days is still exploiting inefficiencies. Do you have any notion of like what the next frontier might be for market inefficiencies?
I'm going to record this. Yeah, I'm going to write a story on this.
If I knew what the next inefficiency was, the Dodgers would have already hired me. but I think like the reality is like most teams are working on health right now. So like literally, if you go look at the Dodgers front office website, like every team in baseball lists like, you know, their player development guys and their scouts or whatever. The Dodgers then have like 17 pages of PhDs and like MDs that they've hired, and they've got like their own hedge fund that they're investing in tech startups because one of these guys might figure out how to save an elbow one day. And like the Dodgers are really at the forefront of this, but a lot of teams are investing very heavily in what Kyle's doing and a lot of the medical stuff. Because I think like if you look at it, 27 or 28% of Major League payroll is on the DL on any given day. That's insane, right? Like how much money is going down the drain to guys sitting around? And I do think rest is going to turn, like we see this in basketball, right? Where like guys are not, DNP rest has become a big thing. And we know this in football, like guys shouldn't carry the ball 35 times a game. This is insane. We're going to see this come to baseball where I don't think you're going to see Cal Ripken Jr. ever again. You're going to have guys playing 140 games a year. The Dodgers have like a 13-man rotation right now and they're making up injuries in order to cycle these guys through. This is really the thing. Is like they're figuring out like this 162-game season doesn't work for most human beings. They can't survive. They can't be good in October. You saw the Cubs were the best team anyone's seen in 20 years last year, and they had John Lester was their best reliever in October because he didn't trust Rondon. These guys were dead by October. They were great for 6 months, and they were absolutely dead in the playoffs. And so I think teams are trying to figure out like if I build a roster that gets me to the postseason, how are these guys still alive in the postseason? And I think that's going to be a dramatic change in baseball if someone figures it out.
You take a breath though, okay. Take a breath.
That was impressive. Wow.
Also, that was impressive.
I'm going to be an auctioneer in my next life. when this baseball writing thing fails, I will sell you some micro machines.
Shannon and I think, sat in a conversation once. Jerry DePoto, who is very forward-thinking, said the next frontier in baseball is sports science. That is the next frontier. How do you understand all this stuff? Whether it's the mechanics of the pitcher to make them more efficient, the mechanics of a swing to make them more efficient, to health. Sports science is the next one. So if you're smart, you can do this stuff. If you're like me, then you do what I do. But that
is the mental big thing. Side that they throw in as well, and now the travel and the physical toll that that takes as well. A lot of Mariners, including, have nap rooms now in the back, the sleep sciences or something.
Nelson Cruz.
That I can
Nelson
get behind.
Cruz is a, but he doesn't nap in the nap room.
No, Nelson Cruz, this is the weirdest thing ever. Nelson Cruz will show up, and he does all his work, and he grabs about 47 towels, and he lays down on a couch and then puts all the towels over him systematically, including his face, and then just sleeps in front of everyone. Like, there's shit going on. There's bad music being played, and Nelson Cruz can sleep through it all. And it's weird. Like, everybody thinks that these guys go out and kicking on the road. The other day when we had the off day in Boston, Nelson said he slept till 3 p.m. I'm like, how do you do that? Doesn't your back hurt? And he says, well, I roll over into my side.
Plus, I think his back always hurts.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you're carrying that chest around.
Exactly. He swings that
but hard. Superman is, logo, too.
Jerry, DeBoto, one thing, when I talked to him, and God, I love him to death for this, he wants to have night games at spring training. He's like, why do we have day games at spring training when we only play night games during the season? We play 80% of our games are at night. Why wouldn't we just have night games at spring training? All of our guys are... their sleep schedule's messed up and everything like that. And I'm thinking, yes, let's do that because I like sleep.
That will happen. Like, talking to the few players that I do talk to that on a somewhat regular basis, they all think this is totally insane that they spend 6 weeks not practicing for what their season's going to look like. This, in 10 years, we're going to look back and be like, why did we do that? This is one of the dumbest traditions of baseball.
No, and I do think that it'll happen within the next 3 years. The Players Association is actually getting on board with the idea of having night games at spring training. And I think... you know, if you're going to play all your games at night, then have games at night.
Are they going to be able to golf in the morning? Because that's important.
No, I'm going to recover from my night before is what I'm going to do.
Not you, the players.
Oh, wow.
I don't care about you.
Ryan finally took his golf clubs home yesterday.
Yes, and I never used them in spring.
Over here.
My question, I guess, is for Ryan and Shannon. Covering the Mariners beat every day, has that diminished your fandom at all? Do you find that you're still excited when the Mariners, like, come from behind to win, or is it just all business for you now?
You don't care about my fandom?
Well,
you just renounced it like an hour ago.
The reason I was asking is because I think I've read from you that covering baseball nationally has kind of killed your passion for the Mariners a little
bit. Them.
So I'll go first. I have to tell people on Twitter this, I'm not a Mariners fan. I've never been a Mariners fan, ever. Sorry, I've never been.
Thank you.
My favorite player growing up was Kirby Puckett because we're roughly the same build. So when you get into journalism, you give up a little bit of yourself in that you're not a fan. You're a fan of the game. Like, I'm a fan of good stories. I'm a fan of cool things happening. You know, like, look, I've covered Mike Zunino since he was drafted, and he is simply the nicest human being I've ever covered. I mean, the Mariners have kind of cornered the market of late, Nelson Cruz, but Mike Zunino's a great kid, and I want nothing but the best for him. So when he hit the other day and he had that huge game, I was so happy. I was so fired up to write that story about him, you know, having a good game. But in the end of the day, I cheer for outs. I want to make deadline. I mean, I really do. I want to make deadline. Don't spell anybody's name wrong, you know. And with the Seattle Times, I help with the Seahawks. So I've never had really an NFL team. So I don't really have a team. I just care. I love baseball. I'm a fan of baseball. Like, the fact that we get to watch Mike Trout 19 times a year or 18 times a year, that's the greatest thing ever. Even Jose Altuve, I mean, I think that's the best part of it. But as far as the Mariners go, no, I don't care. And if you were a fan of the Mariners and you had to go there every day when they were terrible, and my first full year was 2008 when they lost 101 games and they had the biggest collection of assholes on the planet, I would have never done it again. I mean, honestly, Richie Sexson and Jose Vidro, oh, my God, I hated them all. Hated them all.
Richie Sexton lives in Bend, Oregon now. Richie Sexton and I are neighbors. We like live in Bend, Oregon together. I'll tell him you said hi.
You guys can hang out. You know, he didn't hate me that much. I just hated him more than he hated me.
I'll pass that on.
Okay.
Richie's the only player I told to go screw himself.
I think that was there.
It's the only time that ever happened. You didn't hear that.
You talk. Somebody mentioned that Adam Lind didn't really like baseball. Richie Sexton hated baseball more than anything in the world. All he wanted to be was a basketball player in his life, and he couldn't do it, and he could play baseball.
Those guys aren't uncommon, though. I mean, you run into those guys. Keith Folk was one of the great examples of
John
that.
John Halama was
the biggest
one.
Hated baseball, and all he wanted to do was play hockey, and he had a hockey stick there. We were having that conversation a few years ago with I forget who it was, Jerry Krasnick, Jason Starr, a few other guys. How many players on the team, what percentage of guys you've covered would you say love baseball? I mean, love it. Like, really love baseball.
Oh, Cano is like
Cano
the
was
biggest.
The first name. Yeah.
Cano is the biggest baseball dork ever.
Yeah.
I mean, he will watch every game. He knows everything about
He's
every player.
He's such an interesting guy, too, because when he first came to the Mariners, I got the A-Rod vibe from him, and yeah. I thought that was just BS when he was saying that stuff. And the more you're around him, nope, that's him.
No, he has no life outside of baseball and collecting Jordans. I mean, I don't really think that.
But would you say it's a high percentage? I mean, the fact that he stands out like that, what does that say?
I don't know.
How do you define love the game?
You just do. I mean, guys who just, they can't imagine doing anything else. They truly love it. They can't wait to come to the ballpark every single day. They love it. They love to do what they do.
I would think if you're a GM, that would be a quotient that you would look at. I do think that Jerry looks at that. That you want guys that want to be there and, like, embrace the game, embrace the grind. Because it's a miserable grind for those guys. And if you hate it, it stands out.
And it infects other people.
Oh, yeah, completely. Like, Sexton and those guys, it was when they were down and out early and they were out early, I mean, that was the most fucked up team I've ever seen in my life.
So are the Mariners changing their culture? Has that culture that led to that perhaps ruined guys like Beltre while he was here with older veterans saying like, yeah, don't worry about it, it's just Seattle. How much has that changed over the last couple of years?
I think Beltre was okay. I think he was leading the other contingent at the time. But it basically took, and I know a lot of people groan about the season, but it took getting the huggers in there. It took getting Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Sweeney in there telling guys we're okay. And hey, it's great we're in third place and not last. That's how far down they were at that time, that they had to embrace, you know, a success that small.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic. When you know a team checks out and you have no empirical evidence that they've checked out, it's hard to write it, and they're never going to admit it. But you see it every day when they stop working. And that was the one thing, you know, how you notice it is guys like Ibanez, who just kept working throughout the season. Like in 2008 or 2009, he just kept working. Like he just played. And
people looking at him like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he would go and take early work with all these young kids while the other veterans just sat there and like, okay. And then Raul Ibanez had the most productive season of the year.
Why didn't he work on his defense?
Well,
he did.
Was that him working on his defense? Because what is him not working on? That's what I'm here for.
Hey, that's like asking me why I can't dunk a basketball. Some things can't happen, all right? All
right, let's go back to the crowd. Where are we? Right up front.
I don't know if I'm directing this more for David for you guys, but I work for Root Sports, and one of the things I've been trying to do, or at least thinking about, is advanced analytics on broadcasts or even in mainstream baseball media somehow. And I have found it difficult in any way to, like, pitcher wins. Like, there's no, like, you just can't take that away because there are people who, pitcher wins are big. Yeah. Like, while I think that advanced analytics has won, there are some people who never thought there was a war to begin with because they were never going to win.
Hey, Hazel and Yakima is always going to love pitcher wins.
So
that's how it is.
I guess my question is, how do you ever so slowly make some kind of a segue into some other way of covering?
I mean, I've talked to like some like stat-friendly broadcasters and like guys who try to get this stuff on the air. And I think what I've figured out, at least for me, is I don't think the number matters, right? Like, we don't need WRC Plus on the broadcast. We don't need to explain what WOBA is. Just tell the accurate story, right? Like, if a guy's 18-6 with a 5.95 ERA, don't tell the people at home he's good because he's clutch, because he has some innate ability to win. Be like, man, he's got some good run support this year. Like, tell the story that's true, and you can do it with the old numbers, right? So, like, I don't think it's so much about getting pitcher wins or ERA off the air, getting, you know, WOBA instead of on-base percentage. It's just figure out, like, the broadcaster should be responsible to understand the game well enough to know this guy's good, this guy's bad, and convey that to the viewers using whatever number that the viewer can understand and accept, and just tell the true story.
What you have to remember is the audience is so broad. It's not one or the other. And there are a lot more Hazels out there than I think a lot of people want to admit. Oh, yeah. And if you can accommodate both, that's what you want to do. And a lot of it comes down to how accommodating the broadcaster is to it and how, you know, their ability to kind of grab onto that. Mike Lowers is totally into the numbers now, and that's because they were presented to him. And the more, you know, it answered questions for him. He's got just an insane ability to break down any situation, often before it happens. But he was able to do that, and so it was more answers for him. And so he does, you know, when you hear him with stats, with numbers, different metrics, he's not reading them. He knows them. Dave Valley, of all people, getting better. And that's because he went to the MLB Network, and he had to deal with these numbers.
Well, yeah, no, let's
and not I'm go. Done. Hey,
let's not go Kruger right now, because there's a level of insanity there that just is not... Kruger's nuts. I mean, he really is nuts.
All right, we're going to move on to another question.
No, but seriously, I think it is the announcer's responsibility a little bit to help educate a little bit. If a guy has, like as Dave pointed out, a 15-5 record but a 6 ERA, then show other stats and say, hey, maybe this is a little hollow, okay? Or provide something. We're at the times, you know, I still get emails about, why do you keep referencing OPS? I don't know what that means. I'm like, this is the most basic metric, and I write it on base plus slugging percentage. But we are in the efforts of, in talking to Jesse Smith, we're going to do like a video and story presentation about why these numbers matter, and not so much why they matter to fans to assess, but why teams use them to assess players. Now, they won't give us everything, but I think that's important. Like, if you continue to educate people about why these numbers are important, I think that's big, because when I first started covering the beat, I didn't want to learn this stuff. But, you know, I've got a nerdy guy here. I've got to read him every day.
I wouldn't let you go.
I'm like, I had to learn. And I mean, how many emails did I send you?
Yeah, a lot.
A lot.
We had like a summer of education. I should have charged you a course or something.
Yeah, but Dave, I was like, this guy sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Do you want to see wins go away? Do you want to see ERA go away? Or do you just want to see it?
I mean, I think if I was going to, like, design it from scratch and, like, I could, like, okay, everyone...
You don't get to do it from scratch. You can do it from now.
So, no, then I don't think getting rid of pitcher wins and getting rid of ERA is all that helpful, because there are people like my mom who want to watch baseball and don't want to get hit over the head with complicated things. She just wants to enjoy the game, and I want people like that to still be accessible. I don't want baseball to be this elite snobbery. Only the hardcore fans can understand it. I think we can tell accurate, true stories with wins and ERA and batting average, and it's on us to do that.
Yeah, it's in-depth. I want to know this. I'm going to steal a question. Why should I use Fangraph Wars instead of Baseball Reference War?
Are you my friend?
Well, I don't know. Are you going to give me a crown and water?
How about this? Yeah, I'll pick up your crown.
Okay.
Baseball Reference War is more along the lines of what people expect, especially on the pitching side. That's pitching is really where they're really different. Baseball Reference War is basically based on ERA. So it's going to look at it, okay, guy has a 2 ERA, he had a good season. We're more based on FIP and, like, you know, walk, strikeouts, home runs. I think if you look at it historically, it might not be resonant with what you think. It's like, this guy's a 2 ERA. Of course he had a great season. But we're doing a better job of identifying the player's actual ability.
So yours is a nerdier war.
Ours is even more esoteric than theirs.
Like, I feel like they could have a showdown between Fangraphs and Baseball Reference.
Be good.
Similar to Anchorman when they get out there, you know, and they have that fight. I'm carrying a trident. Dave's carrying a trident around.
Right.
Jeff's walking around with
a scouts from Baseball America have to, like, the umpire the whole thing.
Yes.
All right.
I'm in.
Who's next? Where are we? Back here, I think.
Okay, so first of all, I just want to say this panel is amazing. Oh. I mean, every one of you, Brock and Sock, I think that's just like a comedic duo that can't be matched. Shannon Dreyer.
Well, the fact that you think this is good and Brock's not here, I think should tell you
something. I understand that.
So I'm telling him that.
You hit
right
me
now.
With
go
a,
ahead.
You hit me with a golf ball at Newcastle one time.
Brockton?
No, Stockton.
Oh, so.
Shannon.
So you were by the clubhouse, so, not in the middle of the fairway. No, no.
I think Ryan Divish is one of the best.
Yeah.
Newspaper people in the, around. I've been on USS Mariner when Adrian Beltre became a Mariner. I just think this is a great panel.
Thank you.
And when we talk about stats like ERA and wins, I also come from a baseball background. I used to be John Lester's catcher in high school.
Oh.
So
yeah.
I've
2.53.
But then I'm also a nerd. I went to Lakeside, and I'm sitting here with three other Lakesiders, and we're fantasy baseball fans. So things like ERA, things like wins, they matter to me just because of fantasy baseball. So I just wanted to bring that into this. We haven't been talking about this kind of thing. We're talking about the Mariners. We're talking about real baseball stats, advanced stats. But what about things that make baseball fun, like, you know, throwing your bat when you hit a home run?
Yeah, we're actually going to get Bat Flip Plus on Fangraphs pretty soon.
Yeah.
So, it's a new metric coming this summer.
I'm taking Rougned Odor in my roto.
He's going to have like 17 Bat Flip Plus or something.
So the question is for people that want to have fun and play fantasy sports, watch baseball, big Mariners fans, how do we take baseball and make it so that it was like when I was young and I had a Griffey rookie card and baseball cards were a big thing.
Yeah.
What's the next baseball cards? What's the next thing to make baseball
Some of
fun?
It is you have to go back to being seven.
Yeah.
You have to not have responsibility. You have to not have a job. You have to not have kids. You have to just be seven. And that's not easy to do.
Oh, no, it isn't. You can do it. You can be seven.
Or you can be divish.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Those of us with kids. I do think like one of the things that Sabermetrics got most wrong like 20 years ago when we were really pounding the door was we were not a big tent baseball club, right? We're right, you're wrong. If you're not with us, you're against us. Right. You're the enemy. And we pissed a lot of people off over the we created all kinds of divisions that didn't need to exist. I think it would be great if the Sabermetric community essentially became like the big tent of like, how do we fix the game, right? Like 39 strikeouts in a 16 inning game with 14 home runs. This blows. Who wants to watch this anymore, right? Like this brand of baseball is not nearly as fun as the 1980s when Willie Wilson and Vince Coleman stole 300 bags a year, right? Like that brand of baseball is better, or at least more fun and enjoyable. So how do we figure out how to get baseball back to that? And instead of just fighting over how to make each team slightly more efficient and find the extra 2%, like maybe we can all come together and be like, how do we make sure that baseball is entertaining for our kids and it's not just guys throwing 117 miles an hour in 20 years?
Yeah, it's
yes.
Also, Murray Chass is over there in the corner. He's got a gun pointed at you right now. He's like, wait for
he
it.
Died.
Yeah.
That's some intern story on his website. He died a long time ago.
I'll leave you guys just this last one. We'll try to finish that because we gotta get out of here apparently. But Ryan, why don't you say what's going to make baseball more fun?
I don't know. I think that the personalities of baseball get lost a little bit. Maybe it's the course of the season, and maybe it's because we're NFL dominated. But there are good dudes in baseball, and we have to find ways. And I think MLB in general is bad about promoting their stars. I think they have a problem. This is something Griffey used to rail upon last year when I had to do a 2-hour interview with him for the Hall of Fame, and he didn't talk about the Hall of Fame for 1 minute of 2 hours, and I transcribed it all. He talked about they don't promote the stars. And, you know, Mike Trout doesn't make it easier to promote him. He's kind of boring. Nice guy. He's kind of boring. Clayton Kershaw, nice guy. You know, but you've got to find ways to promote stars. And I think that makes baseball fun a little bit. Have these things. Baseball's in this weird spot about where the NFL is and everything else. I don't think it's boring. I don't think it's too long. I just think that they just have to find a way to kind of push themselves forward. I mean, we all watched this year when the Cubs and the Indians. How great was this World Series this year? Yeah, when you cover a team that doesn't ever make the playoffs, you love the playoffs. I mean, you sit and watch. I'm sitting watching a bar with my friends. We're debating it. Twitter's fun. I mean, that's what they have to encapsulate is the momentum of the playoffs and how do you push that through the season. Maybe it's too long. Maybe you can't do that. But that's where baseball has to go. They have to take the excitement of the playoffs and push it through the season, whether it's the Dodgers and the Nationals playing this weekend. You gotta promote the hell out of it. You gotta make sure that that's part of your appointment viewing.
Shannon,
I think they need to make the sport more accessible, and they've done it in some ways in that they've finally embraced the Sabre side, and they had to because the organizations did, but that opened up an audience that was so big and made it inclusive and a different understanding of the game. But I think you have to go back, and the commenter over here, the fantasy side of it, the bat flip side of it, I think that baseball has spent, and this is a pet peeve of mine, they've spent the better part of the last 8 years, I believe, trying to find out how do we shorten the game. And they've spent so much money trying to shorten the game, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And my God, you're kind of a good job. You cut 45 seconds off of the game. We all feel that, right? I think those efforts have been wasted, and I think that it needs to be put back into the communities. I think you've got to get the kids playing baseball. I think each team should have an investment in their communities and getting them. That's how you raise fans. That's how you get more people out. The game needs to be more accessible in the cities that it's in.
Wow, you're like a preacher.
Are you going to drop the mic the way Jeff did earlier? Because I think he actually dented one
of
those
mics. I'm a
radio
person. I know better. No
Damn
mic
right.
abuse.
Shannon's been well trained.
Expensive.
All right, how about a little round of applause for this panel here? If you enjoyed this, this is actually what it's like just hanging out with these three people. I've done it. I've had drinks with them. Maybe even this exact group. And it's kind of like this. It's just talking about baseball. It's fun. It's really fun. And you can do it sometimes between 3 and 5:30 leading up to a game. That's why I go down to Safeco.
I'll lend you my BBWA card that I don't use.
Yeah, what the hell?
Thank you, everybody, for coming. I hope everybody enjoyed this. It's a lot of fun for me personally. Thank you very much. Enjoy. You can catch Ryan later at the bar with a crown of water.